Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news. The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
So let's go to a company that is often looked to, Tim, for its various businesses that can tell us a lot, too, about the macro business environment and just the macro environment overall.
Yeah, we're talking none other than Berkshire Hathaway. Berkshire's earnings always closely watched as a proxy for U.S. economic health because of the expansive nature of Warren Buffett's businesses, ranging from Railroad, BNSF, Geico, Carol, and Dairy Queen.
So much going on. And the stock has been, it was moving closer to that $1 trillion mark, but not going to make it, it looks like, today. Let's get more, though, on the quarterly update, what we heard from Warren Buffett. With us is Bloomberg Intelligence Property and Casualty Insurance Senior Analyst Matthew Palazzola. He's here in studio. Matt, good to have you here. Stock was up. We were closer to the $1 trillion mark, although we still had a ways to go. What was important about the quarter for this company?
So I'm not surprised that the stock didn't reach there today. I actually thought it would be down
on the open.
Yeah, it was up 3%.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that. The quarter was fine. It wasn't really great positive. It wasn't really all that negative. I thought the insurance earnings were actually going to be a little better. They did carry the whole company, but I thought they were going to be a little bit better. If you peel back the onion on Geico, their expenses were a lot lower intentionally, which helped them out a lot artificially.
What do you mean intentionally?
So the auto insurance loss costs, meaning the cost of accidents, has risen dramatically since COVID.
Right. We've talked about
this. Yeah, we talk about this a lot, but from the context of how much it costs us in premiums.
Right. And so they're raising those premiums because their costs are going up more. They're losing money. So even no matter how much more you're paying, the auto insurance companies were still losing money the past couple of years. So what Geico did was they actually reduced a lot of staff. They reduced a lot of advertising. We looked at the run rate for the year, and they spent about $1.5 billion less than their run rate normal expenses just in Geico. So that propped them up a little bit, too. I would say this, though. I think the negatives were in the letter, actually. So you've got the typical wit and wisdom of Buffett in there, which was great. Mm-hmm. He had a little homage to Charlie Munger, you know, got a little dusty in my home office. But he talks kind of negatively about the railroad outlook and the energy outlook. So labor costs and energy and the regulatory environment, I'm sorry, labor costs were in the railroad and then the regulatory environment in energy. And those are go forward issues, which will impact next year. So I think that's probably partially why the stock's selling off.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the balance sheet, because a big part of the story to emerge after Saturday's letter is the record pile of cash. I mean, we're talking $167.6 billion. The problem, and Warren Buffett's talked about this in the past, there's nowhere to put that money.
There's nowhere they can
move. I feel
like
he's been saying that for years.
He's been saying that for a long time, and it's been true. So what has been the newer thing, I would say, in the past maybe 5 years, is we're talking about private equity bidding up a lot of the companies that they're looking at. And they hadn't seen this level of competition in years. Besides the fact that you just need something gigantic to move the needle for them anyway. I mean, they bought Allegheny, was $12 billion. Their investments in these Japanese trading houses are now around $20 billion adjusted for currency. And that still doesn't move the needle. So I don't think we're going to see anything huge anytime soon.
But what about... Oh, sorry, Carol.
No. Finish on that, because I want to go back to actually the railroads and energy.
I was going to say, yeah, what about increasing stakes in Occidental, for example, because they have the option to do that, or increasing stakes in other companies they have.
So he talks about... I always thought they would buy Occidental, right? Now, that was, I think, very widely speculated. They threw cold water on that last year at the annual meeting. He actually reiterated it in the letter that we're not going to buy the entire company. We love it, but we're not going to buy the entire company. I think they can. They probably will increase the stake in it as much as they can. He also called it a forever investment. So that one and the Japan trading houses. So I think you'll see stuff like that on the margin. The 13F came out a couple days ago before. There weren't any, you know, dramatic new positions in there. So it's a
trimming
great problem.
Apple a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good problem to have, but, you know, a problem nonetheless.
Not buying NVIDIA. Like, it's not his new Apple or anything, right? No, it's not happening.
No, so I don't think so.
Go back to, I mean, what we love about this company is that Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway tend to really invest in just kind of these core industries that often are tell us a lot about the economy. So energy, railroad, you said higher labor costs, and energy specifically?
Energy specifically. So there's the regulatory environment specifically on the West Coast. So there's a lot of, there's the wildfires, right? And if the utilities end up causing these, they have to shoulder a lot of the cost for them. So two things. One, Pacific Corp, which they own, is involved in a bunch of litigation. They're settling. It's not hugely material for the company as a whole, right? It's a couple of billion here or there. It's not good for Pacific Corp, but it's not going to hurt Berkshire's financial strength. But what Buffett had said was, depending on how those fire costs end up, may determine if we want to make further investments. So it was kind of, if we get banged on this, we may not invest much more.
Well, that's what I think is interesting. He's not necessarily pulling the plug on it, right, or backing out, but it doesn't necessarily, he's going to pony up more money to it.
I don't think so. I mean, the other thing in the railroad you mentioned, the railroad is constantly consuming capital. It wasn't necessarily negative or that things were going poorly there. It was just specific to railroads. They were having labor shortages, one. And two, he kind of... railed against the government getting too involved in the labor negotiations and saying those keep coming up and those will hurt the margin of Burlington Northern, which has trailed peers historically.
Just very briefly, 20 seconds, May 4th, 2024. That's when the annual meeting is. What's
next
on your
focal
radar?
Point.
Next, yeah. I want to hear more from Ajit Jain and Greg Abel. They'll be there. They were there briefly for the past 2 years, but it would be nice to hear a lot more from Greg.
You do wonder how he pulls those guys in. They obviously, right, are key now to the future of the company, but with Charlie Munger and what's happened and his passing, how he kind of relies on these guys, whether they become part of kind of the show, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they will. Honestly, Munger didn't even really talk much last time anyway.
All right, going to leave it there. Matt, thanks so much. Matt Palazzola, he's Property and Casualty Insurance Senior Analyst, covers Berkshire for our Bloomberg Intelligence team right here in studio. This is Bloomberg.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Listen on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
Tim, Elon Musk and EVs.
Check.
Elon Musk and satellites and space exploration via SpaceX.
Check.
Then there's the brain, Elon's Neuralink project.
Okay, some news there recently too. So we can go ahead and say check, I think, at this point, but don't sign me up for it.
And what we haven't heard much about in a while is Elon's tunneling venture, The Boring Company. That is until now.
I think it's fair to say uncheck on this one.
Exactly. Well, which is why our Bloomberg Business Week team had to do some digging around, no pun intended. They found out that The Boring Company's tiny Las Vegas loop is all that's come of Musk's promise and his promises overall to build super fast mass transit hyperloops. Workers say its tunnels, meantime, are packed with chemical sludge. This is a story by Max Chafkin and Sarah McBride of our Bloomberg News team.
Max is Bloomberg Business Week columnist, also a contributor to the Elon Inc. podcast, a new episode dropping tomorrow on the Bloomberg Terminal and on Bloomberg.com/Elon Inc. Max is here in our
studios. Is it called the sludge episode?
It's a sludge special.
Since we talked about the sludge, we got to start with the sludge because it's actually kind of serious, pretty serious stuff.
We're laughing,
causes some pretty bad health effects.
Yeah, so I mean, the genesis of this story are these documents that we obtained, that Sarah McBride and I obtained from the state OSHA, that's the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, and it basically shows lots of complaints from workers about unsafe conditions, including this issue of like these toxic muck, which the workers say they've had to wade through. The reason it's toxic, it's not necessarily like they're doing something that's totally outside the norms of tunneling. These chemicals are sort of standard chemicals that are used, but the allegation from the workers is that corners are being cut, they're trying to move too fast, they're doing it on the cheap. You know, and the funny thing about this, or it's not really funny, but these are the things that Elon Musk has set out to do to some extent. Like, the whole point of the Boring Company, like many of Musk's companies, has been to cut unnecessary costs. The thing that we're hearing with this story, however, and I think you see echoes of this elsewhere in Elon Musk's empire, actually, is that they're not necessarily finding lots of innovations there. Mm-hmm. They're ultimately ending up with a normal tunneling company, essentially, that happens to have a safety record that some would say is troubling.
Okay, so here's what's a little puzzling to me, Max. Elon Musk is a guy who's literally putting chips in people's heads. He's doing something that only until SpaceX did it, governments, right, taking a whole of government approach, could do. We've been able to dig tunnels for transportation purposes for over a century. Why is he running into so much trouble here?
So I think I wrote one of the first stories about this back in early 2017, talked to Elon Musk at the time about this. And just to put a slightly different spin on what you just said, and which relates to this, which is that SpaceX is not the first company, not the first private company to build rockets, right? The shuttle, all the things that NASA done were built by government contractors.
Right, but what I'm saying is he's doing it in a way that is really innovative.
Well, yeah, 100%, very much.
Reusable stuff, that was a real
innovative contracting process. They used contracts. They sold them directly to the government at a fixed price, which was new. But one of the core things that SpaceX did was like go out and look for existing technology and find a way to improve on it and do it cost effectively. Now, there are a lot of potential inefficiencies in the world of aerospace, and Musk has had a much harder time in some other fields finding similar sort of levels of inefficiency, just sort of low-hanging fruit. And I think the tunneling example is one. You know, he talked about, back in 2017, he talked, you know, it costs $1 billion a year, and it takes a year to dig a mile, and it costs like $1 billion a mile, or some very large figure like that. And now Boring is doing maybe a little better on cost, although it's hard to know, but when you look at the actual pace that they're going, it's basically a mile a year. It's not that much faster than existing tunneling projects. And when you look at the end result, we're not talking about mass transit. We're not talking about, you know, big subway cars full of people, which is actually what many people in Las Vegas, you know, would have hoped for, because traffic there is really bad. What we're talking about are Teslas, just normal cars that can take three people and a driver. They're not even driverless, and they're limited to 40 miles an hour. So we're so far away from the kind of grand visions. And just to remind people, what Elon Musk originally promised here was New York to D.C. in 29 minutes, San Francisco to Los Angeles. Yeah, in 35. Sounds awesome. You could commute from, you know, you could like commute halfway across the country. And you know, it just hasn't gone that way. And I think, you know, in all sorts of different ways across Elon Musk's empire, you're seeing maybe fissures, cracks, ways in which the promises are not necessarily matching up. You know, we saw this ruling with pay in Delaware. You know, of course, lots of problems documented at X/Twitter. And here you just have like a very visceral way where you have these grand promises. And in the end, what you have is basically a glorified shuttle bus system. It doesn't take you, you know, from one end of the country to the other. It takes you from one end of the Las Vegas Convention Center to the other.
Is it just a case of, that's all it can do so far?
The plan I mean, to some extent, yes. I mean, the thing that, if you squint, and I think the reason that this was approved, it's partly that it was approved because Las Vegas is a low regulation city. These are mostly on private property. There isn't a ton of oversight from the government as there might be in other places. But also, you know, they're talking about opening these stations throughout the city. But, you know, when we talk to people on the ground there, it is a long way from happening. It's also hard to see how this is going to make a huge impact on traffic. Again, when you're talking about, you know, moving people three at a time very, very slowly, a lot of things would have to happen.
Right.
And there are lots of reasons for skepticism. I mean, you know, digging underground is hard. There's a reason it costs so much money. It costs so much money because there's stuff you can run into, complicated property rights, and of course,
so the company's issues. Not going to create a trillion jobs?
Well, yeah, which is what Elon Musk told me back in 2017, they were going to create a trillion jobs. I'd say it's a long way from that, to put it mildly. I mean, there was sort of flirtations or talk of various projects. There was one in Maryland, one in Los Angeles, one in Chicago. And in all these cases, you know, he was bringing along some of the most famous politicians in the United States. So it was Larry Hogan, you know, governor of Maryland, who former governor of Maryland, who was, you know, at the time a big star of the Republican Party. Rahm Emanuel, you know, former chief of staff to President Obama, mayor of Chicago, Eric Garcetti, star mayor of Los Angeles. Like, a lot of people went for this, and they just, you know, they haven't been able to deliver. And I think there's probably some element of distraction. Obviously, Musk has a lot going on. And also, I think just tunneling, this is hard. You're dealing with dirt and
putting
muck
people
and
up
stuff.
In space and stuff in space is really hard. Tapping into the auto industry.
Saying.
I mean, this is like going back to Tim's point, right? How many times we're like, you know, you count out Elon Musk or whatever, right. And then he's like, whoa, look what he did. And I understand there's a lot on his plate right now, and that's got to be distracting. But should we not rule him out? Has he not found the right boring tool? What is it, Max?
Well, I would say, I think there's probably a bunch of different factors going on. I mean, one thing that was different with SpaceX is you had a very interested buyer, which was NASA. You had the U.S. government wanting to finance this thing,
right.
Looking for somebody just like Elon Musk, and Elon Musk sort of finding a way to fit himself, to sort of make himself look like the thing that the U.S. government want. Elon Musk is really good at this. We're seeing this with Starlink as well, where, like, you know, he's this what seemed like a civilian technology, these internet services for, as Musk told it to Walter Isaacson, I think he said, you know, it's to Netflix and chill. Increasingly, this looks like a potential military tool. This is gonna lead to government contracts and could be a big line of business for SpaceX. You know, I think what happened is in 2016 and 2017, Donald Trump becomes president. There's a lot of talk about infrastructure. And in general, there's been a lot of talk about wanting to spend public money on infrastructure, but there hasn't been a ton of delivery, right? And I think a big part of this was predicated on this, you know, the thing that Trump was saying, which was like a $1 trillion infrastructure plan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ultimately, infrastructure, whether it's Elon Musk or anyone else, is very expensive. It's politically dicey because you have land rights and so on, and it just hasn't come together with the speed that SpaceX came together.
Max, I want to dig into something that you said, that you mentioned a little earlier, which is the idea that back in 2017, 2018, a lot of politicians were kind of jumping up and down with the idea of collaborating with Elon Musk. What I noticed in your piece is that tone has totally shifted. And there are now local politicians who are saying, hey, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, including the mayor of Las Vegas, who is, you know, Las Vegas is an interesting place because the city of Las Vegas actually doesn't contain most of the strip. So it's not like she has oversight over all this. As I said, a lot of it is on public property. But Caroline Goodman, the mayor, longtime mayor, her husband was a longtime mayor. She's like one of probably the most famous politician in Las Vegas, is essentially criticizing it and criticizing it on the grounds that it's unpractical. She, you know, from the start has raised these safety concerns, which I think look prescient when you look at this OSHA thing. And she's essentially saying, you know, this would be great if it could actually happen, but I don't see it. And that, again, that does represent a bit of a departure for Elon Musk. You do feel like in Las Vegas, at least, you know, some of the magic, some of that kind of Elon Musk stardust, it just doesn't feel quite to, you know, shine quite as brightly. Maybe that's the lights of the strip drowning it out. I don't know. But it definitely feels like there's something different going on there.
All right. Back to the workers, though, and their conditions. Is this something unusual in terms of infrastructure projects? And I'm always a little wary when there's a line in your story, although no one has been killed at a boring company work site so far in Vegas. It does just speak to how tricky it is.
Yeah, as I said, these are not, like, no one's saying they're using chemicals that are worse than anybody else. What the workers are saying, what you see in these OSHA complaints, are sort of like little things that maybe add up to a dangerous situation. And, you know, we have seen similar stories like this around Tesla's car factories, around, you know, Reuters had a great piece some weeks ago about, you know, a death at a SpaceX site. So, you know, I mean, when you're radically trying to cut costs, when you're going around telling people that the only law that matters are the laws of physics, right, I think to some extent there are going to be costs of that, and we're seeing that. But we should say, like, this is probably right. More an indictment of boring company being less innovative rather than it's like the most dangerous place in
America. You know, there's just hasn't been Proof Rock 3 yet, Max. And that, by the way, is the tunnel boring machine.
Read the story. You'll find out more.
Yeah, which is, you know, promising, over-promising and under-delivering.
They have good names, those tunnel boring machines.
Yeah, T.S. Eliot would be proud.
Of course they do. All right, Max, thank you so much. Max Chafkin, he is Bloomberg Business Week columnist, story featured in the new episode of the Elon Inc. podcast, debuting tomorrow on the Bloomberg and at Bloomberg.com/Elon Inc.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Listen live each weekday starting at 2 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Carol, I don't know if you saw this over the weekend, but actually, you definitely didn't, because it happened like in the middle of the night. And you, well, hopefully
last
you were
night.
Asleep. Yeah, hopefully you were asleep.
I was.
MicroStrategy, it's the largest publicly held corporate holder of Bitcoin, suffered a hack on its X account that tricked some people into handing over a total of more than $400,000 to the attacker.
Not good, right?
The account was compromised.
That's pretty amazing. And they're not alone. Listen, some of the other instances of hacking in the corporate world in the last couple of weeks alone include the Danish IT and consulting company Netcompany, a cyber attack against a division of United Health Group, and hackers believed to be part of a cyber crime group gaining access to some of Prudential's IT systems. I mean, there's constantly a lot going on.
Yeah, no question that hackers are getting more and more sophisticated and going after more and more valuable data. That's certainly what IBM's X-Force, the firm's threat intelligence service, has found. We've got with us Charles Henderson, global managing partner and head of X-Force at IBM. He joins us from Austin, Texas. Good to have you with us this afternoon, Charles. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, so every year you guys come out with this sort of state of the landscape. And, you know, I was actually surprised to see that it's ransom attacks went down in 2023, but not necessarily down for a good reason. The idea is that they're sort of like becoming more sophisticated here. So let's take a step back and just think about the landscape out there, because each and every day it does seem like there's another hacking story.
Yeah, you know, what's old is new again. And I think what you're seeing is not necessarily a change in cyber crime, but it's a change in monetization strategy. The cyber criminals are getting some headwinds, and the market forces dictate a change from ransomware, where you have governments that are stepping in and saying, hey, we're going to forbid you from paying the ransom. You have organizations that are better suited to just recover from backup or really anything but pay the ransom. And you're seeing attackers change their business strategy to accommodate a changing market.
Okay, so it's interesting, right, in terms of some of the shifts. I guess what really kind of freaked us out, or me out specifically, is the exploiting of identity. And I just think about how increasingly so much of us have loaded everything and anything in our worlds, a lot of it financially connected or related, onto our phones, right? And we've got Norton, we've got different types of systems in terms of storing our passwords and so on and so forth. But nonetheless, our identity, it sounds like, is increasingly at risk. What have you guys found out? Give us some color around the number alone.
So normally when I get up here and I say, hey, there's a 5 or 10, maybe even a 20% increase in something, that's a signal that you should be paying attention, right? Well, we had a 71% increase in credential-based attacks. That's where somebody takes a valid credential set and just logs in. And the truth of the matter is that logging in is a lot easier than breaking it, okay? Mm. And once you have valid credentials, you really render a lot of the perimeter defenses useless, because a lot of these detection and response capabilities are centered around finding things that look abnormal, and a login is just the system behaving normally. And a lot of this comes back to the fact that we're not using multi-factor authentication. Users have a tendency to reuse passwords. And when passwords are compromised, there aren't a lot of organizations that are checking to make sure that those compromised passwords are not still in use in their environment.
Well, I'm also amazed at how much I get something in the mail or some kind of email. Oh, by the way, you know, our systems were compromised it was your information. And here I'm finding about it, you know, several weeks after the fact.
So be vigilant.
Yeah, thanks. So be more specific in terms of what kinds of things are that, to your awareness, are being targeted.
So, you know, the world at large it suffers a lot of breaches. And each time a breach occurs, information is leaked. And the attackers are taking that information and selling it on the black market, on the dark web. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is credentials. And credential sets have escalated in value because criminal organizations are becoming adept at using those credentials to effect a breach. They're using it as their initial point of access. And essentially, when you have valid credentials and you know that users are going to reuse passwords, it becomes really easy. We're taking an already stacked deck and we're really giving the criminals a real advantage.
My concern, Charles, is less about, you know, what I'm doing right now to keep myself safe. I'm pretty confident. Well, I shouldn't say that because then everyone's going to try to attack me. But anyway, my bigger concern is like what's already out there. And I always get like, you know, these annoying, like I was at the dentist. I think I've shared this story. I was at the dentist a couple of years ago and they're like, we need your social security number. And I'm
no!
like, there's no way I'm giving you my social security number. You're a dentist. Like you're good at filling cavities, but I have no idea how good you are at keeping
you
my social
security. You never accepted
yeah, and
this,
he's like
government,
we need it
right?
for the insurance. And I'm like, really? No, like, don't. If you do, then I'm not going to come here. And he's like, okay, we don't need it for the insurance. Like, we'll figure it out another way. But it's like, never give out your social, but it's out there. That's the problem. And then it gets stolen. And I mean, what's a consumer to do?
Well, you know, first of all, I think you had a great strategy there, which is just don't give the private information that you don't need to give. Secondarily, there's some information that you may have given out. Maybe you have a password that you use more than once. And I know we tell you not to do it, but statistics show you're going to do it. Well, every time you get a note that says your information has been breached, that's a great time to rotate all your passwords, okay? And at the very least, look at the password you are using in the breach account. Make sure you're not using it elsewhere. Similarly, you can start to think about the type of information that may be exposed in a given breach and ensure that you understand what your exposure is.
Is artificial intelligence helping fight against cyber attacks, or is it helping to stimulate and increase the frequency and maybe even the sophistication of cyber attacks? And good answer too.
Yeah, there's three real, I think, pillars of AI, if you want to think about it when it comes to security. There's AI as a target, there's AI as a tool to prevent attacks, and there's AI abating an attack. And right now we're in the very early stages of AI, and we really haven't seen AI used in massive attacks just yet. That said, you know, we've seen it used maybe in helping to craft phishing emails as an example in a foreign language. That's not to say it won't be used. It's just an early phase of adoption. Secondly, we have AI used in defense. So AI used in defensive attack, you're really starting to see that blossom. And the hope is that the security industry can stay ahead of attackers in leveraging AI. And then finally, you have AI as a target for attack. And it's really important that we start looking at the supporting infrastructure that we're using in a lot of these AI instances and say, hey, have we thought about security there? Not to mention the AI itself, but you know, think about all the things you use to train AI or to host the functionality of AI. There's a lot of attack surface there. And as we rush to this new market, we want to make sure that we're doing it responsibly.
Charles, how concerned are you about spoofing? And I don't just mean spoofing when it comes to, you know, the caller ID says Amazon's calling and it's not, you know, really Amazon. More so when it comes to the voice stuff. And, you know, we had that robocall earlier this year during the New Hampshire primary that was not actually Joe Biden, but sounded like President Biden. And then you have all these, you know, people who are saying, okay, you know, I didn't know if my son was actually in jail and I got this call that said he needed money and those sorts of things that used to be emails that you could ignore, but now they're getting pretty sophisticated.
You know, I think there's a learning curve on the part of the general population there in terms of, hey, these things can be faked. You know, 10 years from now, I think we'll have a deep understanding collectively as a society that just because you hear or see something on video or audio doesn't mean that there's a high fidelity to it. It can be faked. And I think that until we get to that learning curve, there's certainly going to be abuse of the ability to use AI and other technologies to fake audio and video.
Hey, one last thing. Europe feeling the brunt of the cyber attacks, according to you guys, your report and your findings, making up 32% of global incidents. Why and how is the U.S. doing? And we just have about a minute or so left here.
So the U.S. is right behind them. So don't breathe a sigh of relief just yet. This year, essentially, or in 2023, essentially, Asia-Pac and Europe switched places. Some of that can be geopolitical tension. Other can just be following the money trail and you know, easy targets. At the end of the day, attackers are going to take the path of least resistance.
One last piece of advice for those of us who are worried about our identity being stolen. Just a quick piece of advice, 30 seconds. Is it just simple passwords? Be smart, folks.
Passwords is a great start. First of all, use unique passwords, complicated passwords, all of that. But most of the organizations you deal with will offer multi-factor authentication as an option, if not require it. Just because they don't require it doesn't mean you shouldn't be using it. Enable multi-factor authentication. It only works if you enable it.
Agreed. I kind of love it.
I do too. I do it for everything.
I'm like, okay.
Hey, we got it here on the Bloomberg Terminal. Every time you log in, right? You type your password
it's
in
tough.
And you get your fingerprint.
It's really tough.
Or you can use the iPhone app.
No, it's good and it's super, super secure.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Keep driving you crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, just got about 18 minutes left in today's trading session. Carol Masser along with Tim Stenovic. Charlie, of course, just breaking down the numbers. We were just talking with our Bill Maloney, and Jess, who covers the markets, goes on the squawk and talks about interesting trends and stories.
But you know he squawks on the weekends?
He does.
If there's
news? He's kind of nonstop, but it's just, he said today, it was like he kind of was searching for things to talk about, although he did note Bitcoin topping 53,000, reaching the highest in more than 2 years.
Gives me something to think about.
Does it?
Yeah.
What?
I don't know, maybe like a little comment about Bitcoin during the close today. Who knows? We'll see.
We're both like, we need this, we're need
dueling
this.
Dueling comments. Hey, I know somebody who has her eye on the markets all the time. Yes. That's Ann Maletti, head of active equity at Allspring Global Investment. She joins us from Wisconsin. And good to have you with us this afternoon. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me back.
Okay, quiet day, but that's okay because not every day can be like what we saw last week. You're arguing that the sign that we're seeing that breadth is expanding when it comes to the rally that we've seen so far this year bodes well for stocks moving forward this year.
I do think it does. Signs of breadth are generally positive. We saw a lot of concentration, as everyone knows, that was the theme of 23, the Magnificent Seven. What quietly started to happen in October of last year is a broadening out. And it's something that we talked about in our outlook piece for 2024, that we really believe that that would be the trend for 2024, that especially in the small and mid-cap space, that those areas of the market that had been ignored would start to outperform in 2024. And that's what we've started to see kind of quietly and name by name, which is another thing that I think is warranted. Fundamentals do matter. Valuations do matter. And we're starting to see that. And so for the last, I think 11 of the last 13 weeks, we've seen the S&P mid-cap index outperform. We're kind of nearing where the high was in November of 2021. So not quite at that peak, but close to that peak. And the Russell 2000 even, you know, continues to look attractive. You know, people forgot that we've been in a bear market for the Russell 2000, one that lasted 23 months. And that's a long time. The average bear market for the Russell 2000 typically lasts 11 months, where the typical bull market for the Russell 2000 lasts 35 months. And so, you know, it just, the rally started in October, we're early into it. And so if fundamentals and the macro economy can stay strong, I think the quiet areas of the market are the places to be. And the places that have been ignored are still the places to be.
And so I just want to go, what's been the good of the market so far in terms of trends and maybe just, I was going to say technicals, but we don't have to go there. But just in terms of fundamentals, what's been the bad of the market so far this year? Because if I look at the S&P 500, most of the major industry groups are higher by a lot so far this year. And then we've got like real estate utilities at the bottom of the pack losing some ground. And we kind of, that makes some sense in terms of the interest rate environment. But what is the good and bad of the market so far?
Yeah, Carol, it's a great question. And what I really like, as you point out, it's hard to see it when you look at the sector level, mm-hmm. but the good and the bad really is happening kind of at the company level. And you're even hearing about it. You guys talk about it every afternoon when you talk about earnings, and you're seeing earnings react to what the company is delivering on. And so if the company is actually delivering and producing growth and earnings, then the company is getting rewarded. And that wasn't always the case in 2024. You know, for the small and mid-cap space, you were seeing multiple compression, even if the companies were performing, even if they were delivering earnings, where in the Meg 7 stocks, yes, they were delivering earnings, but you were also seeing huge multiple expansion. And so fundamentals are really starting to matter. So is valuation. I would say there are still some areas of the market that look attractive to us. You can't ignore technology, so I'll just throw that out there. Our managers certainly are still interested in technology, but it's not necessarily just a few select names. They are looking down cap and looking at technology names, and it's because margins are really strong in those areas, in that area in particular, and we think sustainable. Healthcare, though, is kind of at the other end of the spectrum. It has been the area that's been the baby thrown out with the bathwater in some cases. Fundamentals weren't the greatest in 2023. They were hurt by a lot of factors, lower utilization post-COVID, et cetera, but we're starting to see utilization pick up. I think also the fears of the GLP-1 drugs now is starting to get sorted out, like what might be reality and what might be just kind of like fear. And when you look at earnings growth projections for 2024, healthcare has one of the best expectations for earnings growth. And so that is an area that I would say, generally speaking, our managers are also very interested in.
Well, and it's actually the third best performing major industry group out of 11 in the S&P 500 as a whole, up about 7.7%. And it's interesting. I love that you went there because it's, I feel like there's been so much news. There's been a fair amount of M&A activity like within the space. So you definitely see some things moving around. Where do you not want to be right now?
I think the areas of the market where you really just want to stay away from kind of factor into that low quality space. And I know that's kind of a generalization. So let me just define that a little bit. Certainly, I would be fearful. Our managers are kind of shying away from companies that don't have great balance sheets, where free cash flow is kind of on the decline, where the competitive situation for companies doesn't look great. And so I know it's easy to kind of go to low quality when the market is rallying like this, because that's where you think you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck. But I don't think that's a good long-term strategy because the macro environment is still certain. So generally speaking, I would stay away from anything that appears to be low quality. And that's what our managers are doing. I do think the utility space has been a little bit more difficult, as you pointed out, because of rates. That, you know, probably will stay that way for a good portion of the year, but, you know, it does have a yield. And, yeah, you know, at a certain point, that's going to be attractive too.
Hey, and just 30 seconds left, our team breaking the news that Charter Communications is said to weigh a takeover of Altice USA. You argue that M&A is going to start accelerating in the later half of the year. Where should we be looking for M&A?
I think, you know, healthcare is definitely one of the places, technology as well. But I think we're going to see it across the board. Companies and CEOs, CFOs tend to get a little bit more optimistic once we see rates stabilize and once they think that the economy is pretty stable. And so I think the setup is pretty ripe right now for M&A.
Hey, 10 seconds. M&A activity that we are seeing, that's a good market sign. That's a positive, correct?
Yes, it is. It's a great sign.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you. Covered so much ground, as we always do with Anne Mulledy. Anne, take care. Be well. Anne Mulledy, head of active equity over at Allspring Global Investments, joining us from Menominee Falls, Wisconsin.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.